The so-called Islamic State is not the only massive and urgent crisis facing the international community. There's also Ebola, spreading at lightning speed through a number of West African countries. Australia's promised $7 million to the emergency, but the frontline charity Médecins Sans Frontières says, "We don't want your money." MSF says it welcomes the funding pledge, but it cannot accept any donation of funds from the Australian government. What's needed instead is a specialised civil and military deployment to affected countries in West Africa. Médecins Sans Frontières Executive Director Paul McPhun joins me in the studio now. Some people might think it's unusual for a charity, a major charity like yours, to say, "We don't want your money."
Yeah, well, to be clear, I mean, we've had a very consistent message both internationally and here for the last 2 weeks in discussions with the Australian government that what we need from the Australian government is to assess their emergency medical and logistics capacity and an answer to whether they can and will indeed provide a support capacity on the ground in West Africa. That's what we need to see as Médecins Sans Frontières, a large and massive scale-up of boots on the ground with the capacity to support in the response to this disaster.
Now, last Friday, I spoke to Ian Norton from the WHO on the ground in Monrovia, and he said that not only was he building field hospitals, but you have field hospitals there. But essentially, the whatever is there now is being overwhelmed. Just paint us a picture of what Médecins Sans Frontières is seeing on the ground now.
By being overwhelmed, to put it in context, we're sending our volunteers, Australian, New Zealand medical staff, logistics staff. They go expecting to treat patients, expecting to cure people, provide them with care and make them better. What they're spending a majority of their time doing now is turning away people who are infected with Ebola and sending them back to the community where they are going to continue infecting their communities because we simply do not have the capacity, and then dealing with the massive burden of disposal of bodies. So we have returned volunteers coming back with horrific stories of how out of control this epidemic is and how despite the massive response in terms of resources we've put to bear, they're inadequate in the face of the scale of this crisis.
And I talked to Ian Norton too about the exponential nature of some of the graphs we're seeing. If the process that you're talking about continues with people going back out into towns and villages and cities and infecting others, what are the consequences?
The consequences are really beyond the speculation of anybody, but currently it's a massive out-of-control epidemic with a caseload that just continues to increase exponentially. Currently, it's 5,000 people infected, according to the World Health Organization, who predicts there could be up to 20,000 lives lost within 3 months. The reality for us is very clearly what we see. The patients that actually make it to our clinics are the tip of the iceberg. It is without question that the numbers we're throwing around today in our discourse in the media and elsewhere represent absolutely the tip of the iceberg of what is taking place. The majority of people affected, we're simply not aware of.
And if people are treated, what kind of figures are there about how many of them you can actually heal?
Well, it varies. I mean, Ebola is a killer, there's no doubt about it. It's very aggressive and it affects the body in such a way that it makes it very difficult for the body's immune system to build the resistance. If you get it early enough, you can help support the human organism to fight off Ebola. And with some success, we've had between 25% and 60% cure rates in our clinics, but it depends on being properly set up. It depends on having the resources you need. It depends on people having the trust to come to you, and it depends on getting to them early.
And where are your clinics? Because the WHO's Ian Norton told me a story about going out to a city called Bong, where the hospitals had just been completely abandoned because the doctors and nurses were so afraid of being infected themselves.
Yeah, we currently have in the region of 550 beds. Now, so that's literally isolation beds to put patients in. And that's clearly insignificant in comparison to the numbers we estimate of infected people. And what has been said to you is absolutely clear. There are two emergencies here. One is Ebola and the impact that's having immediately in loss of life in three and even five countries. The second emergency is that the health systems have collapsed. So thousands more, far in excess of the Ebola casualties, are dying or at risk simply through a lack of access to preventable diseases, which, as we know in these countries, are rampant this time of the year.
Because somebody comes in with malaria and a nurse takes one look and says, you might have Ebola, I can't touch you.
And that's another problem. So diagnostics are completely overwhelmed, access to lab. And so we really have to triage who do we test and who don't we test. And that's just one element of a far more massive absence of the basic needs on the ground.
Final quick question. What has Australia got that you want? What do you want them to send and what could they send straight away?
Both specialised and general emergency medical and logistics capacity on the ground. They can mobilise this kind of support in the face of other natural disasters. We saw that last year, clearly. There is no reason why that could be not mobilised as part of an international response today.
Paul McPhun, Executive Director of Médecins Sans Frontières, thank you very much.